Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network. This is Nerdish She Wrote with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. It's Friday. This is Dave Dufour. I got Mo, I got Seth. That means it's Nerder, She Wrote. We're back for another week. Fellas, we have had some really fun games the last few days. This has been a better week, I think, than we've had so far to start the season. What about you guys?
We're recording on Thursday. Last night, Wednesday, was the second game night of the season where there has not been a 20-point blowout. So I think that's... last couple of days of games, we definitely have had fewer of the wire-to-wire laughers and more kind of competitive games all the way through, which helps.
I think some of it is guys are beginning to get used to the flow again, you know, and the rhythm. I mean, with how weird everything was, even at the start, I think they're beginning to find the game flow a little quicker and easier.
You know, something I was thinking about after our show last week, and we talked about teams pulling the plug sooner. I wonder if we're going to start seeing teams alter their rotations to try to take advantage of that. And it came up right after the show when Golden State played Portland. Steph Curry rests the beginning of the fourth quarter. It's his schedule. He plays all of the first. He plays the last 6 minutes of the second and then repeats that in the second half. Last 6 minutes of the fourth quarter. Well, the Warriors had like a 15-point lead heading into the fourth. To me, that would have been a great opportunity to upset your rotation for 3 minutes and take a big home run swing. If you get that lead to 20, are you guys telling me that Terry Stotts, looking at the schedule ahead of him, isn't going to say, all right, we got to pack it in because we're probably not going to win this game. We need to be able to be rested and ready for the next game. Am I overthinking this?
Yes.
You don't think it's worth taking a shot? Like play Steph Curry 4 minutes at the start of the fourth, and if you can get that lead to 20, then you pull him.
That's a playoff mentality. That's not a regular season mentality. Because here's the other side of it.
That's fair.
Here's the other side.
But in the playoffs, they're not pulling the plug. They're not pulling the plug.
Stop. The other side is, and if you don't cut into that lead. Now you're in trouble because now you've overextended him and he doesn't have the legs at the end of the game.
I'm saying they have a lead. They have a 14-point lead.
And you're saying stretch. You play him so that you can stretch it out or so you can stretch it out, blow him out, and give him the rest, which is great. And the other side of it is, no, you don't. And now it's a 6-point game.
And he's played 40 and ends up playing 42 minutes.
Yeah, and now you've really put yourself in a bad spot. And down the stretch, he doesn't have the legs he would normally have.
Okay, well, that leads into our first topic, which actually came from a listener. DJ, appreciate you hitting us up on Twitter with this topic idea. And to everybody listening, we're always looking for interesting things to talk about. So please continue to give us topics. But he asked if there was any viable evidence that says 38 minutes per game portends higher injury risk or a depreciation of a performance versus like 34, 35, 36 minutes. And I think that this is a great question because, you know, we've watched LeBron James sort of load manage himself in games. Like he could play 40 minutes a night, but there is a different level of intensity when the game calls for more intensity. And so I'm wondering, Seth, in particular for Seth, because you have looked at the numbers on this, what sort of drop-off do most guys see when they cross that threshold? Let's say 35 minutes to 40 minutes. Like, is it steep?
So this is one of those questions that keeps coming up a lot. First of all, like we sort of use minutes played because we don't have anything better, but minutes aren't minutes. Like we're trying to, you know, estimate kind of what's known as athletic load. And you know, the pace of a game, how you're playing a game. I mean, think of defensively, you're playing against Houston versus you're playing against Miami. If you're not guarding James Harden, you're doing much less defensively. in that game against Houston than you would against, you know, a team that does a lot of off ball action and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, those minutes, like minutes don't always equal minutes. So the minutes are kind of a shorthand. The second part that makes it problematic is it's hard to come up with the cutoff because in part, like the last couple minutes that you're going to play, assuming you're closing a game, are, you know, played under different conditions. I mean, if you look at how the game is played, the first 2 or 3 minutes of a game are played sort of differently in large part, like refs are very reluctant to call fouls that early in the game. And then like the last 6 minutes or so of a competitive game are also played, just played very differently. So the statistical accumulation gets weird to begin with. And so that's a long-winded way of saying I haven't looked at it in enough detail to control for all these things to really be sure. However, I don't think it's just a one-game problem.
Right. It's about the entire season because every single game is different. And Mo, something we talked about when we were discussing this topic is how different, like if you're going to play 38 minutes a game, right, and you're closing those games, or if you're playing 38 minutes in a game, I should say, the odds are that's a close game. Otherwise, you're not having your stars play at the end of the game. And those minutes when at the end of the game, when it's close, that's a different level of intensity, right, Mom?
No, it's a whole different deal. And Seth and you both kind of alluded to it. It's those last 6 minutes of a close game. It's more stressful. It's more urgency. You're from both sides. So you're going at it harder. And so is the other team. So you're competing on a different level. It's not a, you can't take a playoff mentality. You can't, I'm not going to make this rotation right now. It's no big deal. But it's like, oh no, this might be the game deciding play. So I have to make that play. I have to make that rotation and so on and so forth. So,
you know, if it's the wrong rotation, trademark Russell Westbrook.
I mean, that's, oh God. We're just going to take a shot that quick. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, so. Well, it's still a rotation. It's still a rotation.
He's done it twice against Philly this year.
It's effort, though. It's effort. It's better than watching Zion from time to time. Just stand there. But the level of intensity goes up. So, of course, you know, you end up playing harder and your adrenaline and all that stuff's pumping. So you exert more energy. But one thing I also want to talk about when we talk about just minutes. The big thing isn't just the number of minutes they play, it's consecutive minutes. You know, there are guys can go, you know, hey, we can play 38 minutes, but we got to give them, you know, bursts of rest or here or there. You know, we saw it with when Zion came back and they were being very, I thought, even too careful with the bursts. But it's a level of like there are times where you can look at it and it kind of goes to what you said at the top of the show, Dave. You can leave a guy out there too long. And he just gets gassed. And then you have, and now you've exhausted any chance for him to recover.
Well, this is 100%. I know this for a fact. This part of the thinking with the Steph Curry rotation, right? Is you play him for that full quarter, especially to start games, because he's such a rhythm player and you help him get into rhythm that way. But then he gets the quarter break and 6 minutes of the next quarter. And so he winds up with, you know, I don't know, 20 minutes on the bench of rest time, and then he can come out and go full tilt for that last 6 minutes. I know that's why Steve Kerr does that.
Yeah, this is I remember the first time this started to get talked about was late in John Stockton's career. They'd actually in like playoff games, they'd have like,
yes,
well, he's sat for 2 minutes of game time, but it's 19 minutes of real time. And it's just like, well, A, that's interesting. B, why are those 2 minutes taking 19 minutes? But that's a whole other. But to Mo's point and to your point, I mean, I am not an expert in exercise science to any degree, but I mean, there is the concept of redlining, right? You can go to a certain extent and recover. You can go to a certain extent and recover, but there's a point at which you go fast, you go past, and it's not I'm recovering in minutes. It's I'm recovering in days. And so that's the worry. If you push a guy too hard, a guy can go at the intensity he plays for 6 minutes and you make him play 9 minutes, you redline him and he's done for the game. Now, the hard part again is since we can't legally track kind of athletic load in games.
So do it illegally.
No one has ever done that. Tom Haberstroh has never reported on teams doing wearables in games. But no, so I mean, but that point is different for every player, and it can be different for a given player based on their conditioning level. So it just becomes becomes very hard to study. And I think over the course of a season, I think that, you know, the gains to an extra minute, I think, are outweighed by the downsides of, you know, all the bad things that can happen if you go too far. You know, it's very much a Price is Right thing. Like, you know, going over it's a whammy, and going under, you could still win.
And I want to kind of goes back to the playoffs and all the stuff we kill Bud for in terms of how much he plays Giannis, you know, and I think that's something that in the regular season, you have to start conditioning these guys' bodies to be able to do that. There's a way you can ramp it up, you know, ramp these guys up slowly so they're ready by the playoffs. You know, I'm not saying, Giannis needs to play 40 minutes tomorrow, but you need to just ramp them up so that their body can handle that load when you need them to, you know, whereas if you just throw it in now, it's like when everybody in the playoffs was like, they got to play Giannis more. I said, I don't know if Giannis's body could handle that. And if we'd get the production value, and again, we don't know the numbers out of it, but like it would just be extremely difficult. And I think that's an important fact. And that's going to be something to watch for with the Knicks. You know, you have Elfrid Payton balling. You have Julius Randle balling. Payton played 42 minutes last night. Randle played 40 minutes last night. How long can
RJ Barrett sustain? Only played 33 though?
No, but that's the thing. How long can they sustain playing these heavy minutes and be productive? At a certain point, your body's like, yo, dog, I need a rest.
Well, let me ask you guys this. In a season that is likely to continue to have more blowouts than normal, do you think playoff teams are going to be less prepared because they're going to play fewer high leverage minutes overall?
That's a great question. I was talking to Ben Falk, hopefully future guest on the program, Ben Falk, about this week. And his stats on cleaning the glass kind of remove garbage time. And he defines garbage time basically time score and number of starters on the floor, because the teams will kind of tell you when the game's over by their guys coming out. Basically, through a beginning of this week, there was in fourth quarters, games were averaging an extra minute of garbage time per game, which is just a massive increase between this year and last year. And so, yeah, you talk about there being fewer high leverage reps. If the trends continue, that's a lot. You know, if you go from, you know, you go from, you know, 5 minutes of clutch play a game to four, that's 20% less, you know, hashtag math.
Yeah. Because we talked about how unprepared teams were in the bubble. You know, I mean, it was one of the big things about the Clippers that we felt wound up being their undoing was not having a lot of time with their guys healthy, playing in games that mattered. And when I'm looking at what the first few weeks of the season has been like, it's one of the things that's top of mind is, you know, as the regular season becomes more and more about getting yourself ready for the playoffs, right? The talented teams, that's what they're doing. Everything that they do all season long is about having yourself reaching your peak just in time for the playoffs. I think it's going to be pretty hard to have your rotations totally mapped out and to know what you want to do by the time you get there, just because of the lack of opportunity.
Are teams building towards the playoffs, or are they getting to the playoffs? I think there's a difference. And I think some teams are better at actually, like, this is, you know, something that, you know, we at some point we'll probably talk about the struggles of the Raptors this year, but this is something that Nick Nurse has been notable for in the regular season, is especially his first year with Kawhi was like, okay, we're a championship contender. We know we are. I'll cost us a game or three this season just to try stuff during the season because I want us to be our best then. Versus, you know, there's other, I just want to maintain and get us to, this is, you know, the Clippers were maybe the other extreme last year. Let's get ourselves there healthy and then we'll work it out. And I think we all kind of agree at this point that the Clippers should have been treated the regular season differently than they did.
Oh, they should have been less arrogant. Let's just be honest. Let's throw the punch. Yeah. No, they shouldn't have been so damn arrogant with how they acted all last season, thinking they're just going to walk through everything. Sorry, Seth, I did cut you off.
No, it was appropriate. I was rambling. But yeah, so, but to, I mean, I think that there, what Dave is saying, that's how teams should operate. I'm not sure that's how I am sure not every team does it that way.
It's there are right. Not every team, but there are definitely teams that do. I think it's going to be more difficult for them.
I think it's what's I don't necessarily think it'll be more difficult for the teams that know they're going to be in the playoffs. You know, like we saw it, like you see it with Frank Vogel. Watch his closing lineups. They're never the same because he's testing guys out. You know, in the game they lost to Portland, he played Montrezl Harrell a lot longer in the fourth quarter than he probably should have because he wanted to see what Montrezl Harrell had, you know, and it cost him the game with how bad he was defensively. Now, maybe he should have known this in film from everything we've known about Montrez forever, but he needed to see it for himself and see how it would work with the other guys and whatnot and go from there. It's about kind of like, it's almost for some of these teams, the regular season is a fact-finding mission. What can we go to?
Right.
What can we not go to? And then for the teams that are just trying to make the playoffs, it's, yo, we just got to make the playoffs.
I think we need to do a better job, by the way, of recognizing what you just said. Like, I think that some people probably, like, you know, criticized Frank Vogel for that. And it's like, yeah, if you're trying to win tonight, that's maybe not. But let's see. Like, I think we all suspect that might be an issue with Montrezl Harrell. But how much does it matter to the Lakers' season to take a game in December, January and give it a look? What is that like?
Well, also the Lakers have that personnel that maybe you can close games with Montrezl Harrell.
But he doesn't know if he doesn't try it
a few times, you don't know. Right. Exactly. No, I agree completely.
But this is stuff that Frank Vogel did even last season. You know, like it was he had a rotating closing lineup and whoever was going well that game, he was putting in. And then he decided what he wanted to go to in the finals and you know, during the playoffs it was LeBron, Morris, and AD, and that worked out for them because they won a championship. So it's for some of these teams, it's that way. So like your original question, though, Dave, is it going to be harder for these teams? I don't think it's going to be harder for the smart teams that know they're going to be in the playoffs. But I also think this is something that happens every regular season, not just this year. And I know your point with more blowouts or whatnot, but you're still going to play guys. You're still going to explore. And even in some games, don't be surprised if some blowout games, you see guys, starters play a little longer just because it's like, yo, they needed to get the burn. They needed to get the run. We needed to see we wanted to try a few things.
We need to get him his 60.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the way, I'm here for that. So it's, you know, let's see.
Taking me out of a game if I'm close to scoring 20. Ain't happening.
Well, hey, listen, if your own teammate's taking you out of the game, you know.
It's going to be the scene from Major League. It's going to be the scene from Major League where Doran's on first base. It's going to be Major League 2. Doran's on first base and they're trying to take him out. And he's like, nope, I'm not leaving. It's going to be me.
All right. Well, so we're going to do something different this season. And we're going to start with this episode. We're going to do a better job of actually talking about specific teams and things that we're noticing with one team at a time. I just think it's a little bit better way for us to check in on things. And since we're talking about, you know, Bradley Beal going for 60, let's talk about Philly. Let's talk about the team that gave up 60 to Bradley Beal. In particular in that game, I don't know why their defense, they didn't just play him straight up. I mean, they were top locking him and he was cutting backdoor the entire game. Seth Curry kept giving up middle, which pulled Embiid up, so he was out of position. And Bradley Beal just feasted. And it makes no sense. They had the personnel to play him straight up. I don't get that.
It was just more – I think it's just one of those things where they put in a game plan, and, you know, if Seth Curry's giving up middle, screws up the game plan. Now, should Doc change? Probably. I mean, sometimes it's something that he doesn't do all that well in the moment and things like that. But the truth is also, they weren't really getting hurt by anybody else. I didn't feel like. I mean, if it's like, look, Doc would take that. Okay, Bradley Beal's going to score 60, but we're going to get the win. Good. I got it. We're fine. That's a win for us. Plain and simple. So I think that's something that they would do. So instead of kind of trying to adjust sometimes too much or trying to be too reactionary to what's happening, opens up things. And now Davis Bertans is hitting threes. Now Russ is getting into the lane at will and finding Thomas Bryant for a bucket. You know, it's all of those things. And I think it was, as much as it was like, yo, do something different, stop this guy. It's like, well, no, if we're still winning. And they were up most of that game by like 10 or 15 until the fourth quarter.
This it reminds me, and this is one of Eric Name's favorite quotes. This is my my last year, I think, in Milwaukee. We played, I think, the Knicks, and the Knicks hit a bunch of threes in the first half. And someone asked Giannis about it after the game, and if we're, you know, still giving up threes to, like, you know, mediocre shooters, and they're making them. And his response is, "Hey, that was the game plan, and they made some shots, but did they win? They did not win." And I think that's a little bit like what, like what Mo is saying. Like, yeah, Beal's getting 60, but at the end of the day, we have 10 more points than Washington at all time. So why do anything different? You know, it's
well, it got a little close there, you know.
It got close, but in the end, but it was like, you know, yeah, and became a exciting stuff, but it becomes a different story then once you start. When you, it's the cartoons, right? When you try to plug the one hole, three other holes pop up, and it's like, oh, wow, I have this problem. Now I have more, I've made it worse. And you can't go back. It's harder to adjust back to, okay, go back to normal. Go back to what we were doing, guys. It's like, oh, well, okay. You know, it becomes more challenging. And I think that's something that we don't appreciate a lot, you know, on the outside, kind of looking at these things. We're always like, why can't we see this change? You know, and why can't they make this change?
Well, all right, Mo, you worked with Doc Rivers. What do you see from this team that shows that he's put his fingerprints on it? Like, does this seem like a Doc Rivers team yet?
I think there's a confidence level in the sense of, like, listen, last year this team would be up big a lot and blow leads, you know, and lose the games. And I think there was that at the end, was like, okay, let's lock down. You know, I don't know what the exact number was. I think it was like an 8-0 run or something to end the game or something to really kind of put it away a little bit or keep it safe. But it was that kind of stuff. And it was a level of like, oh crap, we screwed up. And then it just gets worse. And I think that's something that we're seeing that's different from this team this year versus last year, where they would have just lost the game.
I think we have to acknowledge that also the biggest difference, the coaching has obviously changed. The biggest difference is their personnel just fits better. I mean, I wrote earlier this week at The Athletic, no team improved their shooting by more. And when you start with, you know, Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, that's kind of important. I mean, last year we thought they'd be great defensively and maybe get just enough shooting. And they were only pretty good defensively and didn't get nearly enough shooting. And this year they've been really good defensively, albeit they've perhaps played the softest schedule in the league. But they've been really good defensively, and you know, you plug in Danny Green and Seth Curry for Al Horford and Josh Richardson, like, that's a massive upgrade in your spacing around two guys who need spacing.
Yeah, I mean, the one was, I mean, they shot 62% from three last night. Yeah. I don't know. Was the Liberty Bell being constructed the last time they shot that well?
As Seth Curry says, that's just Wednesday. So
yeah, perfectly fine. And I think there's another thing, aspect of this team that I'm really enjoying watching. And it's Joel Embiid's having a great season, but he's passing so much better out of the double teams. And it's not necessarily for the assist. It's the immediate kick out that leads to the swing, you know, pass. It's the hockey assist. It's all of those things. And he's just doing it so much better this year. Whereas last year, he would just try to take on the double and triple teams on his own half the time. And I think there's that level of improvement that we're seeing from him that's made a huge difference, that allows the team to take advantage of him maximizing him in the post and allow them to show, like, yeah, we can shoot now, so good luck doubling us.
How much of that is, first of all, him having more confidence? It's like, yeah, oh, the guy helped off Seth Curry, there you go. And also, you know, last year, especially in the playoffs with Simmons out, they just had so hard a time entering the ball to him. And now he knows if he gets good position, he's going to get the fastball in the face and be able to go to work. So if he gets doubled, there's no hesitation. Like, yeah, I'll, you know, they doubled, that's great, we won this possession, let me kick it out, I'll do the same thing next time, and they won't double because we just banged a three, so I'll get it back. And I think psychologically it makes it just easier to play better when you have all this thing working together.
Yeah, but I think this was something that was a problem even 2 years ago. Like, Embiid has the tendency, and you can still see it on the top of the key, being a ball stopper. Like there are times where I'll watch and guys, I coach every team. I yell at the TV every time I'm watching and I'll just yell, swing, you know, and he's going to stop and pump fake and try to do, cause he's going to try to get to the line or do that long lumbering drive to the hoop. So there's still a little bit of ball stopper tendencies, but it's much better right now. His passing out of the post than it's been in any point in his career.
I actually think if he would cut out the pump fake for nobody, right? Those pump fakes that he takes where he's got an open look, I would rather him just shoot it, right? Catch it in rhythm and take that shot rather than pump fake, slow everything down for a minute and you know, try to hit your Euros.
The Valanciunas pump fake that no one should ever buy
on.
Oh, no, but people buy on like, Embiid.
I know.
That's the thing.
Well, people buy in Valanciunas sometimes too. And it's like, that would be a fine.
So, it's amazing.
Through eight games, and I know like their schedule has been kind of soft, but man, I think Embiid has been one of the five or six best players in the league so far. When you look at his offensive production and then the way he's playing defense, he certainly still has those moments where it's like, man, I know how good you are. How did you not make this play? But it just feels like so far there's fewer of those nitpicky defensive possessions out of Embiid. Of course, I also started this conversation by talking about one where he was kind of, you know, caught in a little bit of no man's land. So maybe I need to just stop nitpicking.
No, well, you know, this is something that I've talked about a lot recently is, you know, with respect to like Kevin Durant, we were looking forward to that game tonight. Again, we're recording on Thursday, and now that Durant's out, there's a little bit of the you know, this was going to be like one of Philly's first big tests of the season, and now it's not so much. But when we're looking at Durant and kind of what he has this year, we need to nitpick. And for Philly to be a contender, like they need Joel Embiid to be a top five or thereabout player. So yeah, nitpick. You know, those nits are the difference between being the 15th best player and being the fifth best player. And that's the difference between going to the finals and not in many cases.
Well, let's nitpick. How's Ben Simmons doing to you guys? I mean, defensively, we know what he is. I'd like to see him take more of those in rhythm three pointers.
I mean, we all would, but like, I don't want to, it's when he's ready to do it, he'll do it, you know, kind of thing. And he's got to feel fine. I like when I see aggressive Ben Simmons, and that was something that you saw in the early in this game against Washington. I keep going to that game just because it's fresh in my head, but like you can see the games when he's aggressive and when he's passive. Aggressive Ben Simmons is a whole nother thing, and he's looking to get out in transition. He's looking to get downhill, attack, get to the free throw line, and things like that. I like that. When we don't see it, that's a problem, and that's the thing. The Sixers need aggressive Ben Simmons all the time, and that's going to be a thing that Doc's going to have to work on. I like the way Doc's handling him, you know, and I think that's been a good thing. He's not putting more pressure on him, you know, in the sense of like, he's got to shoot threes. It'll come when it comes. Maybe it doesn't come. Who knows? But it's he is not putting this extra pressure on him. He's saying, go be you and we'll figure it out.
Well, here's another way that Seth Curry and Danny Green on this team are really going to help Philly. Those two guys are fantastic shooters in transition. They're both really, really great at getting to the spot they need to get to, staying in the eye line of the guy pushing the ball in transition. And obviously we know Ben Simmons is skilled there. By the time the playoffs roll around, we could be talking about them as making a real finals run, as long as this chemistry continues to build. I like what I see so far, throwing out the fact that they've had a pretty easy schedule. I do think that now that this team makes sense, you can see it on the basketball court kind of coming together.
Yeah, I think that's right. I do. There's a little bit of one of the things I always look at for Simmons is free throw rate. And he's not taking that many more free throws on a per possession basis, but as a share of his offense, it's a career high. He's actually because they have a little bit more talent. Like his usage is down a tick or two, but his free throws are actually up a tick or two. So that means, you know, he's still not shooting free throws great, but even at a 60% clip, like getting fouled and going to the line for two shots is a pretty good possession, and you know he's doing that better this year. And so that's
my
a big part
thing with Simmons. My big things with Simmons has always been If he could improve his free throw shooting, that's great. But he needs to be drawing more fouls. He avoids contact because he doesn't want to shoot those free throws. I mean, he's not the first guy to struggle from the free throw line and avoid contact because of that. And I think that he's doing that less. Like, he is actually being more aggressive attacking the basket.
And the added bonus, the important thing about it is drawing the fouls is, even if you don't make the free throws, you're putting your team closer into the bonus. And that means the loose ball fouls when Embiid or Tobias Harris are going up for a rebound results into two free throws, you know, earlier in the game. And that's the key. Yes, we all wanted to make the free throws. It's extremely important. Obviously, that might even cost them a game at some point. It has in the past where teams fouled him deliberately down the stretch. But the importance of getting into that bonus early. And I don't know, Seth, maybe you can tell me, I'm throwing something at you that's going to be pretty unfair, but I don't know if there's a number out there or a way to look it up. But how quickly teams get into the bonus in each quarter is an important stat. Like, you know, this is something we used to write on the board was draw fouls, get us into the things. And then there were games where I'll watch a game and be like, oh, this team's in the bonus with 7 minutes left in the quarter. Like, oh, they're about to shoot a gazillion free throws in this quarter. And so on. So I think that matters. And I think that's a big part of his help to the team when he draws those fouls.
Well, the other thing about drawing fouls, and especially for a team that is going to have a dominant defense like Philly, is that going to the free throw line, you are always going to have a set defense on that next possession. You're not getting caught in transition. I mean, transition is obviously the best way to score in basketball. You're limiting those opportunities for your opponents. Not a lot of transition opportunities come off of a missed free throw. It just isn't really a thing. And so they also have that advantage. And so, you know, as we watch this season progress, I think Simmons' free throw rate is something to really pay attention to for the success of Philly.
I'm vamping here because I'm actually PBPstats.com actually tracks the amount of time teams spend in the penalty per game, and this is great radio, of course. No, but I remember. I mean, this is something I was first became aware of when Daryl Morey, when the Rockets had Yao Ming, who's you know, great drawing fouls, but also an 80-some% foul shooter. I remember Daryl saying something that he became the best player in the league when Houston was in the penalty. And I think that goes to what you're saying about the value of just getting that there early. And because, yeah, someone tries to, you know, muscle Embiid out of post position and they pick up a loose ball foul and now you're in the penalty. All of a sudden you've turned trying to throw the ball into the post into a layup. And that's just extremely valuable.
We've talked about how defenses change as teams get into foul trouble, in particular individual player defense. You know, guys are less aggressive when they pick up that third foul in the first half, when they pick up that fifth foul in the second half. And so, like, there's 8 billion reasons for Ben Simmons to continue to put pressure on the defense. But in particular, I do think that he could pick up more points, and that's going to help him win. Like, just the plain and simple more points from Ben Simmons on freebies will be a huge boon. All of the other things are just added benefits.
Yeah, I mean, that's all it is. Oh, he got the number.
I've successfully vamped for time. so far this year, and it's early season, so the numbers are you know, what they are. But so far this season, Philly is third in the league, getting about a third of their possessions while they're in the bonus. Last year, they were slightly below middle of the pack. I'm eyeballing it. That looks like they were about 18th or so, about 26.5% of their possessions occurring while they're in the penalty. And in general, like, offensive rating goes up 3 or 4 points, I want to say, in the bonus. So, yeah, you're getting, you know, you're in those kinder situations where you get just easier play because, A, the fouls that send you to the line, and B, guys are aware that they can't, like – they can't muscle through a screen because it would be free throws. So all those things about Simmons drawing fouls is very helpful.
We also got to talk a little bit about Tobias Harris too. You know, the most success he's had has come under Doc Rivers when he was a Clipper, right? Like, that's when everybody's like, wow, this dude's a max contract guy when he was playing with the Clippers. And whether he is or isn't, a whole different story, but that was his most success. So the reunion with Doc and him is a big thing. And you're watching him play a lot more aggressive, and he looks a lot more comfortable in the system that they've built. And he's kind of a little bit of a bridge for both guys, for the coaching staff and the players. So I think there's an element to that too. That's just like, he's beginning to kind of blossom a bit in his role as kind of their second scoring option, for this team.
Well, you know, when you look at the numbers, like the raw numbers, he's scoring 19, 20 a game, about the same as last year. But right now he's doing it more efficiently. And the way that Doc is using him, in particular getting him involved in pick and rolls, is opening up stuff for other guys. And again, this is yet another reason why shooting is so freaking important, is because now all of a sudden you actually have space to run Tobias Harris pick and rolls.
Yeah.
And you couldn't before.
I mean, simply that.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
We talk a lot about putting shooters around Simmons and Embiid, but poor Tobias Harris, nobody ever thinks about making stuff, you know, a little bit easier for him. His spot ups have been great. He's up over 1 point per possession on spot ups. Again, just having the room, not being the only shooter on the court. And he's not even a shooter, but a capable shooter. Not being the only guy on the court has made everything easier for him.
And also part of his uptick in efficiency is he's having to do a little bit less with the ball. I mean, every single one of his three-pointers so far this year has been assisted. Last year, most of them were, but it was still, you know, about 15% weren't. And he's taking far fewer mid-range shots this year. So again, which is another thing that means he's being able to sort of play off of other people a little bit more. Again, with the spacing that's created by this sensible offensive construction, as opposed to, you know, ending up with the – last year it seems like he was the guy who ended up with the grenade a lot. Because, you know, it's hard to get Embiid the ball late in the clock and have him do something. And Simmons being a non-shooter is not an ideal kind of late clock creator. And so who does that fall to amongst their best guys? Well, is Tobias Harris, and his kind of efficiency and shot distribution suffered for it.
I think that Seth Curry this year is going to wind up being that guy. The release valve, late shot clock. I mean, just he's such a great shooter. He might be the best shooter in the league right now. It's him or Duncan Robinson. I think it really depends on, you know, how you're judging this. Duncan Robinson certainly takes some difficult shots, but Seth Curry makes so many different types of shots. I'm not quite sure. Seth is sitting here racking his brain trying to decide.
Well, so I think I think Duncan Robinson might be this is tough because Seth Curry is like the one guy in the tracking data era who's hit over 50% of his open threes, which is an absurd stat. And Duncan Robinson is the best, has the highest contested 3-point percentage. But I do think that Seth Curry is a more versatile player. He can get to the basket more. He can do more off the dribble, certainly, than Duncan Robinson. And he's not like, a high level dynamic dribble score, but he's good enough that he can do some stuff with it off of the threat of his shooting ability. So I think he like the versatility allows him to just get more shots than Robinson does, even if not all of them are threes.
And all this conversation about Philly and Tyrese Maxey isn't even good yet. God, just wait for a couple of months when he's really good.
I mean, it's ironic because I had a Philly cheesesteak sandwich for dinner. Oh, sorry.
Okay. So as we wrap up, we're going to wrap up the way we do every week. Mo, what are you watching this week, man? What are you looking for? What's catching your attention?
I you know what, Dave? I really don't have one thing I'm watching for. I'm just trying to take it all in. It's still a lot of hoops and a lot of one time and trying to figure out what everybody's doing.
Some have said it's too many games. Some meaning me. A lot of 10, 11 game nights. It's kind of hard to pay attention, especially when you have nights where every game was good. Seth, what about you? What are you looking ahead to?
I'm still kind of side-eyeing the Denver Nuggets. We talked about Philly already. Like, you know, Philly is doing this year so far kind of what I predicted them to do last year when I, you know, picked them to make the finals and Embiid to win MVP. And, you know, I picked the Nuggets to have the best record in the West and Jokic to win MVP. So get your 21-22 Nuggets bets in now, everyone.
So folks, whoever he picks next season, bet the under.
That's the better track there.
Well, right? No, that's Dave, you track. Okay, Mo can take that shot. You, Mr.
No,
Warriors.
You definitely cannot.
Hang on. Well, the Warriors are making the playoffs this year. So
they're making the play-in game, maybe.
That'll be nice. Listen, Orlando Magic 6-2, second in the East right now. Losing Markelle Fultz, that's a bummer. I'm watching Denver closely, obviously, but Portland is sort of the team I'm trying to figure out right now because I don't really understand why this isn't working.
I can tell you.
It is.
Seth has a different reason than me, but go ahead.
No, their defense and especially their point of attack defense is abysmal. They're the worst. They have
awful.
The worst half-court defense in the league right now, and it's because – you know, we knew this. We knew Robert Covington was a better help defender than on-ball defender, and he hasn't been great on the ball. And, you know, CJ has been great offensively, but we also know that when guys are really going offensively and being heavy usage, that, you know, the defensive intensity can drop. And that's something that he's actually improved in recent years, but he's not been good this year, and Dame has not been good defensively. And so they're just in situations where they're just constantly in rotation every single possession, and getting just gashed.
One thing I'd like them, they need to start changing their lineups here a little bit and start playing with this thing. Enes Kanter is not an everyday player. He's a utility player. He's a player, I think.
Well, they just don't have
guys. I know they're out. Zach I know Collins they're out with Zach out, Collins, right? But you know what? Play Harry Giles. Like, get something a little bit different. You have to start changing these things up. I'm not a big fan of Derrick Jones Jr. starting, you know, and maybe it's Rodney Hood. Maybe you're small
Gary
and you
Trent.
Start
just Gary play Gary Trent.
Yeah, I understand the argument because he's small, so maybe there's that, and you're already small with CJ and Dan. But I just think you have to change. They have to start changing and finding the lineups that work. But it's to me, Enes Kanter is a nice utility player when your offense is struggling and you need a jump start. Put Kanter in, but everyday guy, I don't think he's that, and I think that's one of the problems going on with Portland, aside from how atrocious, they think their defense would get better if they changed their rotations a bit.
It's funny.
Well, so now I don't have to. Yeah, no, I don't have to watch Portland this week because we just.
No, but it's funny that you use the Portland example because that now because getting back to what we talked about at the very beginning of the show with like when Steph Curry's minutes are like. The reason you do that is like, well, if Cantor's going to play the first 4 minutes of the fourth quarter, put Steph out. And that's just, that's a blowtorch. Whereas if you're, to Mo's point, like you have an opposing point guard who's good off the dribble. Can't be in the game. You just can't be in the game. It's just,
can't play Kanter.
Can't play Kanter. I mean, you can play Kanter against like Lonzo Ball. You can't play Kanter against Steph Curry.
That's right. Because he's going to hang 60.
Yeah, I think it's an obvious thing. And people need to understand, part of our scouting reports, at least when I was in the league, was we always knew the other team's rotations. We knew the steady rotations. We knew when somebody's going in and when somebody's coming out and all of that. Like that was in all our reports. So that's something teams are well aware of.
Yeah. Well, that's going to do it for this week on Nerder, She Wrote on the Athletic NBA Show. We will, of course, be back next week and every week thereafter for the rest of the season. Don't forget to check out Basketball Buzz dropping Monday and go subscribe to the Daily Ding. It's a good show. A lot of Dave, a lot of Mo on that show.
Can never get enough.
Until next week. Well, I've gotten enough.
No, you have.
Until next week, for Seth and for Mo, I'm Dave. Thanks for listening.